This Sunday Show with Ed Finn with Germany.travel. Feel inspired by Germany. Your adventure awaits.
Sunshine 106.8.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Show. It's Joe Harrington here in for Ed Finn, and we're delighted to be joined in studio by Andrea Corr. Hello, Andrea.
Hello.
We don't really need to give you too much of an introduction, but for the uninitiated, of course, you were with the Corrs and probably will be with the Corrs, I understand, going into next year. You work as a solo artist, but before we talk about that, and you have a fantastic new Christmas album, before we talk all about that, I'd love to know a little bit about, there's a lot of people may not know an awful lot about your background and, you know, when you, as a family growing up and who influenced you musically and, you know, and we know you're, I think you're from Dundalk, isn't it?
Yeah.
So tell us just a little bit about your upbringing and who influenced you musically and the family, and was there music in your family?
Oh, yes. Well, our parents were musicians and actually had a band together. Mum sang for the first time on stage when she was pregnant with me. So our house was immersed in music. You know, they were always listening to stuff that they would play later at the weekend. Like there was like the Eagles, the Carpenters and Simon and Garfunkel and obviously the Beatles. And I mean, we were just totally immersed in music. Yeah.
So it was every kind of music, pop music.
Yeah.
Was there traditional music in your family?
You know, we as like the Jim, Sharon, Caroline and myself got into the trad music kind of later on. I mean, they would have sang some trad songs, I think. The instrumentation, that's something that we got into ourselves.
Yeah, and I know you're a multi-instrumentalist yourself, but when did you start learning to play an instrument? How old were you?
Well, Dad taught us piano at, I think we started at 6. We called them the terrifying piano lessons. Well, they were terrifying for me. Because Caroline, I used to do them with Caroline. And she was like, you know, a maestro sitting there. And I would have, every single week I forgot to practice. But, you know, I look at him now as a mother and think, God, he actually did have great patience and to you know, to take time and teach us. It's not easy to be a parent and teach, I think.
Yeah,
you know?
And did you get formal lessons as well? Or was your dad able to teach you to read music, or do you read music?
We read music. He taught us all that, yeah. But I didn't do grades or anything, no.
Yeah, and then, you know,
Caroline did. Like, Caroline could teach, yeah.
Very good. So, when did you start sort of doing some live local gigs? So what sort of age are you talking about?
We auditioned for the film The Commitments, first of all. And there, that was, you know, when we became a band. And then, but really what we wanted to do was write music. And we more focused on working on our music rather than gigging it. We, I don't know, what year would it have been? 94 or something was when we probably went out and made Forgiven Not Forgotten. We had only done a few gigs, like we did the Waterfront in Dublin, and Whelan's was a very pivotal moment for us, because Bill Whelan, Riverdance of Riverdance and all his wonderful music, he brought along the American ambassador to Ireland at the time, Jean Kennedy Smith, and she then loved us and brought us over to America, which then in turn we went around looking for a record deal and led to us ultimately getting one. Yeah.
And I'll talk to you about that. Just to go back, when you said the family auditioned for The Commitments, was that individually or as a group, or what way? Because I know you had a part in it, which wasn't like the starring part, no.
It wasn't the starring part, but she was very eloquent. No, she was, yeah. Just say the same thing 3 times for emphasis. Yeah, no, we auditioned as a band because that's what it was about. It was about, they were like, Alan Parker come in and he wanted real musicians, not actors, to play these roles. Our manager, who wasn't our manager at the time, he was working on it. And Jim had also been working with him, producing some of John's demos. And then John said, you should come to this. And Jim said, can I bring along my 3 sisters? And I suppose that's it. We became a band then.
And so did everyone ever, because I saw The Commitments, but I can't remember, you know, all of the guys in it. Was Jim in it, or were you the only one of the Corrs that was in that individual part?
Yeah, there were kind of more, what would you say? They might say blink and you'll miss it moments.
Yeah, yeah.
But they are there.
Okay, I didn't realise that.
Somewhere.
Yeah. So just to go back then, so I suppose a turning point, you say, would have been when you, the American ambassador, was there, and that would have kind of helped you head over to the States. So what was it like, I mean, when you're going to the States and you're from Ireland and you don't have the experience, you know, of being professional, and were you overawed by the whole lot, or did you just take it in your stride?
Absolutely. I remember getting off the flight into, I mean, we didn't even, like, long-haul flights. We were completely innocent. We didn't, God, they're going to feed us and we'll watch movies. It was, we were, to me, going to Dublin was a big deal back then. I'd want to rest after it. God knows what was in store for me, I didn't realise. But, getting off, the colour, the heat, the different cultures, it was, kind of very, very...
Completely different, exotic. Tell me about then, when you were there, and did you have to do some gig, perform and rehearse for, to make your first record? Did you make your first record there? Where did you actually record your first album?
We did. Well, we had written the songs at home in Dundalk, and then we got to meet David Foster, and then that's when we got signed to Atlantic Records, and so we recorded our first record in Malibu, in California.
And tell me about the difference of when you recorded the rehearsed the stuff and sang the stuff, and then when they, a producer gets the song, the big difference. Did you say, wow, how can somebody change this? Or were the songs more or less the same as you?
Do you know what? Jim has a co-production credit on that record because he did go quite close to our demos that we had worked very hard on, and Jim had particularly worked hard on them. So there's a sheen of it, that isn't from a little 8-track studio in, like, with tissue boxes or whatever like that to insulate the room. No, there's professional sound.
Yeah.
David's brilliant with vocals. Yeah. Always his you notice singers always sound great when they're with David Foster.
And is it mic technique or just saying do it this way or do it that way, or would you try this intonation, or because sometimes singers are very natural.
He would back then I was extremely shy and like I would want to just sing what was. Yeah. What I was singing, what I mean? I didn't have the...
You're not shy anymore anyway.
Well, I was sometimes shy. I had no confidence though as well. And I was overawed with I mean, he worked with Whitney Houston. I'm not that type of singer. I'm not that good a singer. I've got my different voice, my own voice. So I was quite, I was pretty nervous.
Yeah, and so when the album was made... How long did it take you to realize, wow, this is, the album is a huge hit? Or where was the biggest reception from? Was it Britain, Ireland?
It was Ireland and Australia.
Australia, yeah.
Was really big. And it was amazing like that. Ireland was great. Britain didn't welcome us till our second record. But then they loved our first record. Then at one point they were number two and number one in the charts, in the English charts.
And then how did you feel about, you as a person, generally most people don't change, but what happens is people change towards you, Suddenly you're an ordinary person going along and you do all the things you do, and then suddenly people say, oh, there's, the chorus is Andrea Corr. How did you handle that, or how did you find that?
Well, when I look back on it, I don't think it was easy. I was very self-conscious, very self-critical, like really should have given myself a break, but I was my own worst
critic.
Nobody could do the hatchet job that I could do on myself, as much as they might try. But yeah, so I felt too young to be exposed in such a way. And that was before social media, so God knows if I'd have survived it.
And of course, when you see the Voice and the X Factors and all these different programs and people projected and thrown away, it's very sad, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't understand that. I get very uncomfortable watching that. I always think about that person having to go back to their hometown and a whole nation has laughed at them. I just feel like
that's cruel.
That's look, we need to look at ourselves. Why are we into that?
But even the people that do make it in the, you know, say The Voice or one of these programs, and you know, perceptionally they think they're going to be the biggest stars in the world, and sometimes it's just fulfilling, you know, an entertainment program, and they're just kind of cast aside as well. So that at least your process was a slow process, and you'd worked with your family, and you know what I mean,
and it gives and it was organic. It was homegrown.
Yeah.
And also our focus was music. It was not fame and celebrity. You know what I mean? You know, I think a lot of the time you hear people say, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be famous. But for what?
Yes.
So ours was about music. It was like celebrity, and what comes with that was incidental or a byproduct.
And how did you find the touring? Because you know, I know, even speaking to my own family have done a little bit of, you know, touring, and it can be grueling and stuff like that. And I'm talking about on a bigger scale, an international scale, that people have to travel and you may not be feeling the best and you have to go out and do a gig and all that. How did you manage all that kind of thing?
Oh, you know, I look back and it's quite extraordinary. We really didn't stop. We would sometimes, at one point, we were 4 continents in 3 weeks. We were, you know, there would suddenly be a huge TV show somewhere we had to do, so we'd interrupt the touring to go and back to do the TV show, and then across the world again to continue whatever touring we're doing. It was really full on, and I think it has. I've got a little bit of post-traumatic stress about touring.
Will the band tour again?
We went over to Australia recently and did like a for one night only in Hunter Valley, this Hope Estate. We did this concert. Hadn't been there in 20 years, I think.
Wow.
And it was amazing. But in order to announce that we are returning to Australia in 2023 to do some gigs. Yeah.
And after that, will you include Europe as well? Or
I don't know. I suppose we will see. We will see. Okay. I mean, it has to work with our families and our, you know, our individual lives and everything like that. They are the priority. So
Absolutely. If
it's possible, we will.
This Sunday show with Ed Finn with Germany.travel. Feel inspired by Germany. Your adventure awaits.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
And you're very welcome back. It's the Sunday show. It's Joe Harrington in for Ed Finn. My special guest is Andrea Corr. Andrea, well, we spoke about the Corrs as a family band just before the break. I'd like to actually talk about your journey as a solo artist and your book as well, which is Barefoot Pilgrimage, why you decided to write it and, you know, just a little bit about that journey as a parent, I suppose, as well.
Dad died in 2015, and that's 18 years after Mum died, and she died when I was 25. But I found in the loss of both parents, I mean, I don't know, the ground beneath your feet really does shift, and that loss of anybody looking at you in that way anymore, somebody loving you like that,
unconditional.
Yeah. I got more, I was obviously felt, as you do, feel you're the next layer, you're the next, and also it was just face to face with your own mortality in a way.
That's absolutely,
yeah.
Vulnerability. And the same when my parents died, you kind of get that horrible feeling of vulnerability, and you're next in line, as it were, and you've nobody to really, and it's just it turns your world upside down. So before I just, because the question I wanted to ask you was, before you wrote the book, you would be perceived as a very private person that wouldn't talk about, you know, your private life or your family. So was this a very big step for you to do this?
Well, yeah, it was a very big step, but it also didn't come from. I wasn't thinking I'm writing a book. I wasn't thinking like that. I thought I need to write this story down because it's extraordinary. The family, the house, sort of. I realised with my distance on it that it is pretty extraordinary, and I didn't want those memories to die with me. I wanted it to be, because then there's something about, if it's not written down, did it really happen? I, you know, and it brought me back into that house as we were. It brought Mammy back to life, her actual presence. And so really I was writing it for that reason. I wasn't, it's not in any way an expose, and it's not, I would not be thinking it's the autobiography of a pop star either. It's a memoir of a family, yeah, an ordinary family that probably did some extraordinary things. And then obviously personal things that happened along the way that are pivotal in my life that you wouldn't be who you are without these moments, sad and unhappy, or, you know, moments or happy.
And just tell us a little about that, because it is, you know, a difficult thing for any person. I could even speak for myself personally. For me to, I won't say the word expose yourself, but to expose your vulnerabilities and stuff like that, it's very, very hard, and sometimes painful things that happen in your life. You know, maybe you're perceived as, not you, but any person. Maybe, are you being dramatic? Are you being this? Are you being that? So explain the way you kind of approached your whole, the whole, every personal story you told in the book.
Well, you know, I would walk to write, because then it seemed to let loose the ideas, but also that was silent time because my children were young. You know what I mean? So once I walk, I think when I walk, and I pray when I walk. And again, I wasn't thinking of a reader in mind. Do you know what I mean? So that mean that, because otherwise I would censor myself too much, and I have terrible illness, which is wanting to be liked, which is a terrible thing. How can you write when you're, you know what I mean, feeling that kind of self-conscious? So I had to eliminate that idea, and fortunately it just flowed. It wasn't laboured, or I wasn't, how am I going to do this? I would think of a story, and it would come, and it would flow, and once I'd walk, and then it'd be in, I'd get the line, and then I'd write it into my phone, and later on write it.
And for anybody who hasn't read your book, are there any stories that you'd like to share now, or, you know, or not?
Well, let me see. Oh my goodness, there's a lot of stories in it, I suppose. It's hard for me to pick, yeah.
Yeah, that's okay. No, look, and I would say to anyone, buy the book. So, and I would also like to ask you about, you know, when how much your life changed when you became a mother, and, you know, and how much of your own mother are you, you know, so would you have adapted a lot of her approach to your family, or you unique mother? What sort of influence did she have on you?
Oh, absolutely. I think that we've all mimicked our mother in a way, as much as, yeah, because she really was, and very nurturing. How would we mimic? I suppose the food we make. Like, I find the food we make. I know that, like, early on when we had the babies, Daddy would almost nearly have to look away because it would be so familiar to him, the way we were with our children.
Okay.
Oh, you know, the way we are with our children. And it's stuff, you know, that is, we missed her. She wasn't there for our marriages or our children, which is a loss. You think of how many questions you'd want to ask. And poor Daddy, he'd go, "Sorry, Jerry, I don't remember," or, you know what I mean? Back in those days, they didn't push prams or anything, you know.
Yeah.
But he did my baby, which is lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, those things are the questions that you want to ask your mother.
And with your children, about passing on, you know, maybe traditions from your parents or stories and that, so would you, you know, do that with your kids? And, I mean, children nowadays, I don't have children myself, but I know from nieces and nephews and stuff like that, you know, it's with social media, it's hard to try and keep traditional things alive, keep traditional stories alive, and they're interested in, as I say, Instagram or, you know, WhatsApp or whatever, all this kind of stuff going on. I mean, how, for a parent nowadays, there are huge challenges on the various social media platforms. How do you manage that?
Well, they're young so far, and so now I have
control. What sort of age group?
I have control. They're 10 and 9, so now I have control. It's going to get more interesting when hopefully, you know, it's really frightening, I think, you know, that level of where, goodness, you know, you're so vulnerable as a teenager anyway, with your changing looks and your everything like that, and then to have them exposed and people wanting to look, feeling everybody should look a certain way, and that bringing on, like, it's awful growing up where you get that sense of shame about yourself. That's just, I'd like to prolong youth as much as possible. But this, you know, that social media thing seems to be stealing youth in ways.
This Sunday Show with Ed Finn with Germany.travel. Feel inspired by Germany. Your adventure awaits.
Sunshine 106.8.
And you're welcome back to the Sunday Show. It's Joe Harrington in for Ed Finn. My special guest is Andrea Corr. Andrea, we've spoken a little bit about your book and we've spoken about the Corrs. All things being equal, you will be touring 2023 in Australia, and there might even be a possibility that you might do one or two little gigs maybe in Ireland or Europe or whatever. We'll see. Okay, I want to talk to you about Christmas time. It's a special time. I want to talk to you about this album and, you know, how it evolved and what Christmas means to you and your family and your children. And are they still Santa Claus stage?
Yeah.
Yeah, which is a magical time.
It is magical. Yeah. I suppose if I start with the, you know, inspiration for doing this record, I sang at the Light Up a Life event in for Our Lady's Hospice and Care Services in Harold's Cross a few years ago. 2019 would have been, just before COVID. And I was really profoundly moved by the event, you know, while I was singing, maybe it was a holy night, people holding up their candles for those spirits and the people that they're missing at Christmas. You know, I mean, I know that, you know, the loss of loved ones is even more poignant at Christmas. I know I feel that myself. My dad used to call Christmases, once mum had passed away, a time of absences. And it is, you get all more aware of the empty chairs and, you know, and of your past and the Christmas past, yeah. But I found in this ceremony, you know, rather than like at Christmas time where we can all kind of paint the smile on and go jolly, jolly. And you mightn't be feeling that on the inside. I found it like what struck me was the embracing of our ache and the loss that we are not alone in feeling at this time of year. And, you know, giving thanks for the love that led to such pain in the parting. And for those, you know, I just found it much more, it's just lovely to not ignore it, healthier to embrace it that you're feeling that way. And that element is very much in this record, you know, in the chorals particularly. I mean, I've done it on vinyl because they, as well as all the other formats, but there was a record that I loved. Like, I love Christmas songs and Christmas music. But there was a record that we had in the house. It was by the Ray Conniff Singers. And I loved it. But the A side was more the kind of jolly, jolly Christmas time. And then the B side was more the hymns. Anyway, and the real meaning of Christmas. And that you know, and that transcends throughout the years, the same problems, the same, you know. And yes, so that is very much a part of it. So there is the joy of Christmas there, but there is also the recognition of what was and what is no longer.
And where will you have Christmas, by the way? Will you have it in your house? Will your, you know, will any of the family visit you, or will it be, you know, because I know it's a completely different.
A couple of years ago, we did have everybody around and all the kids, like, because we've 8 grandchildren between us, Jim, Sharon, Caroline, and myself. So
it was chaos.
A very full house. A couple of years ago. This year, I'm going with my husband's family.
Yeah. So, yeah. Okay. Well, that's the, yeah, because you never know. And it's every different experience is lovely. And, when you have all the family together, yeah, and does anyone kind of, I don't know how near or far you all live away from each other, do you try and make the effort to at least go, you know, the way people go around different houses on Christmas morning or Christmas Day morning, to try and, you know, even drop in for a little glass of something beforehand? Or will you see any of the family?
Oh, our family. Yeah. Like, well, I won't be, because we all live in different places now.
Yeah.
But we'll hopefully get together for like a lunch or something.
Yeah.
Like, that's what we try to do. Yeah,
yeah. That's a good idea. Okay, so tell me the songs you picked for the album. You know, was it difficult, or did you go with standards, or did you obviously have favourites and stuff like that? Or did you find some of the songs a bit more difficult to sing than others, or did you avoid any particular songs that you didn't like or anything like that?
I... yeah, I did what you'd imagine, and that I went for the songs that I love. There's like, and there's the particular carols I love. I mean, the we get so used to listening to Christmas songs or Christmas carols that we don't hear the words we're singing anymore. And I've found that the lyrics are very important to me. Like, there's like in the Bleakwood Midwinter, we're used to hearing it, but there's such beautiful, intimate words on the birth of Jesus and of his mother as a mother, rather than the way we see it, but like her. But the line is, but only his mother in her maiden bliss worshipped the beloved with a kiss. Like, she's every mother at that moment, and he's every newborn child, you'd hope, you know. And her just going, this is not like, you know, I just find that moment so beautiful. Anyway, lyrically, it's important to me, that the songs that I picked. Yeah.
And will you go to church over Christmas?
Yes, yes.
And do you go to, are you, yeah. You don't have to answer. I'm just curious, are you a spiritual church?
Yes, yeah.
And so for people who have, obviously there's all sorts of different beliefs everywhere, but people who, whether they're Christian or Jewish or whatever, Muslim, whatever, everyone has their own, you know, beliefs or whatever, but to go to your own place of worship is special at a special time of year, isn't it really?
Yeah, it is. It is. And I find that, you know, even no matter what, that like a room in which people are gathered aspiring to be better versions of themselves and aspiring for a peaceful world and praying for that, that can only be a good thing. Regardless, if you didn't believe in a deity, that would only still be a good thing as far as I'm concerned. But I do believe, yeah. Yes.
Just, I meant to ask you this earlier, but I'll ask you now. How did you find COVID or get through COVID or the lockdown? Was it easy enough? Difficult? Challenging? How did you find it?
Yeah, you know what? It was... You know, I felt obviously on the lucky side of things. That's in a terribly kind of almost sounds black humor way, but like I was glad that both my parents had passed away, and that I was glad that Daddy was not on his own in it, that he was already gone. Mm-hmm. I really feel it was a horrendous time for old people. Mm-hmm. And my heart went out to their families, trying to make sure they're well, but just having to stay away from them. I found it like, I know that I wasn't one of those people that had a hard time through COVID. I didn't. But it was very, very strange. And obviously for you know, your fellow human, I found it like, you know, the situation in care homes and everything like that was just diabolical and just very, very upsetting.
And was it helpful that, you know, you were confined to your house with the kids and maybe, you know, closer bonds and stuff like that. And did you do any homeschooling or stuff like that?
Yeah, we did have to do the homeschooling. No, I was not. I have huge respect for teachers. They know what they're doing. Yeah, did have to do it. There was, but listen, they fortunately they weren't. They're not in. They're not doing. Algebra or applied maths yet. Fine.
Okay. Well, listen, Andrea, it's been a pleasure to talk to you, and wish you every success in 2023. We'll probably squeeze in another track off this album before the end of the show. It's been brilliant. Thank you very much. 2023, your plans are, will you do some solo stuff as well, do you think? Or will you have time? Or is motherhood overtaking you? I know you're going to be doing stuff with the band.
We'll see. We'll see. Yeah.
Okay, because all great plans laid to waste. But listen, thank you so much for coming into Sunshine.
Thank you.
And it's been a pleasure to talk to you. All right.
Likewise. Thank you.
Bye-bye.